here at WBAI. Coming up next, Off the Hook with Emmanuel Goldstein. Stay tuned.
We will not bow down to
it. On Sunday, January 17th at 3 p.m. at the Harlem State Office Building Art Gallery, stand with our freedom fighters as the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee hosts its third annual dinner tribute to the families of our political prisoners, recognizing their enormous unseen sacrifices as their loved ones continue to stand tall for us all behind the walls after all these years.
I just can't tolerate injustice.
Proceeds will go to commissary for almost 24 of our freedom fighters. Make it happen. January 17th, Harlem State Office Building, 3 p.m., free Mumia and all political prisoners. For more information, call 718-949-5153. That's
718-949-5153. We will not obey racism. We will not obey.
Give a gift to WBAI this holiday season by volunteering your time.
We are searching for people to help with pledge drive billings and mailings.
We need volunteers to assist with general administrative tasks such as stuffing envelopes, mailing bills, and preparing premiums for the next few weeks.
Please call us. We could really use your help. Contact Karen at 212-209-2828. That's 212-209-2828.
And the time is just about 8 o'clock, which means, it being Tuesday night, it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get my sweat. Thank you.
Okay, we want to thank you guys for coming in and being a chorus for us while we're trying to make a phone call here. Just turn it down a little bit. Thank you very much. We have a studio in the other room where musicians come and practice, and Brian Eno is just in there messing around. We're trying to call somebody overseas, actually, and apparently we're having trouble with not our phone system as I thought we were having, but problems with AT&T. And I don't know if we'll be able to get through. But we do have other things to talk about tonight, and we will talk about that to some degree, whether or not we're able to get our guest. The program is Off the Hook. It's Emmanuel Goldstein with you on this Tuesday night, the first show of 1999, what could be the last year of our existence on this planet because of the year 2000 disaster, which is going to strike us, and it's going to strike us hard. That's what I'm being told. That's what I'm being told over and over again. Someone sent me a picture just as evidence of what's going to be what's in store for us of the first in many foul-ups and blunders, namely the New York State inspection system for motor vehicles. Apparently some of the cars are getting stickers that say 1991 when it's supposed to say 2001, and that's just causing mayhem. If you saw any mayhem on the streets, well, that's what's causing it. And yeah, it's only 1999. Imagine what's going to happen in the year 2000 and the years beyond. It's pretty scary. We have, actually, Patty is here with an update on the Kevin Mitnick saga, which has taken a turn for the worse. And we have all kinds of other news things. So while I'm trying to call overseas again, why don't you update us as to what's been happening over the past couple of weeks?
Okay. Over the holidays, Kevin Mitnick was moved from... He's still at NBC almost 4 years now. He was moved from 6th North, which was one area of the prison. He was asked if he wanted to move down to 5 North, which is a better place to be. You get more privileges, extra phone time, more freedom, and better conditions. So he was down there for 13 days. Then he was told that he had to be moved to 5 South. When he asked to be moved back to his old floor, 6th North, he was told there were security reasons why he couldn't be returned to that floor, but was never given any specific explanation as to why the changes were taking place. But the thing is, every time you move from one floor to another, you lose all your privileges, floor privileges they are. He had become a trustee, made friends, and had his own cell. Well, over the New Year's Eve, Kevin Mitnick slept on the floor. There was no mat. He had to sleep on a dirty floor. This because there were no cells on 5 South. Not only that, but if he wanted to use a bathroom, he must ask one of the other 135 inmates on the floor if he can use their toilet, because there's no general bathroom facility on the floor. So that's how he spent New Year's Eve, and has continued to spend nights on the floor. Now I understand that just today he was moved from 5 back to the 6th floor, but not to 6th North where he has friends and his original benefits, but to 6th South where he still doesn't know anybody and still no cell. The same toilet problems and everything. But he got his prison library time back, but still no computer or legal help to be with him while he reviews the evidence. They say he was moved because of security reasons. There's one thing, Justin Peterson, a.k.a. Agent Steele, if you remember who he is, he was an informant that actually got Kevin in trouble, as well as other people. And he goes to court and is also at NBC on the 7th floor. So he's facing charges for violating his supervised release, and he was on the 7th floor. So there was some kind of discussion that perhaps they were afraid that they would be talking between the vents or something like that. Anyway, it's unclear why there are security reasons or why he hasn't been moved where he would be comfortable and, what he deserves. I mean, he's innocent until proven guilty. I think it's quite a lot of abuse for somebody that hasn't really, has been sitting there for 4 years, almost 4 years. Anyway, there's something you can do if you're interested. You can call the prison and speak to, he has a counselor named Mike Langowski, and he said that he was sorry, but there was nothing he could do. That's what he's been saying about his Kevin's problems. But maybe if you want to call him, I have the phone number. His name is Mike Langowski, L-A-N-G-O-U-S-K-I. And his phone number in California is 213-485-0439. And, you know, don't be harassing or anything, because that won't really help Kevin at all. But, you know, maybe you can just ask him why he's being moved around, and, you know, ask that he be put in a proper cell with, you know, the amenities that every normal prisoner deserves. So, also, you know, you might want to get in touch with the senators as well there, because sometimes it helps to go above these people's heads.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was talking to Kevin only a couple of days ago, and he was obviously beside himself with frustration as to the latest developments here. It basically seemed as if he was kind of tricked into leaving the place where he was the most comfortable, where he had built up relationships and privileges and things like that. And they had asked him a couple of times before, will you please move to this section, because we need the room. And he finally agreed, as a favor to them, to help them out a little bit. Actually, he's doing them favors. But he said, look, it's okay for me to be there, right? Because this is mostly for people that have already been sentenced, this section here. So it won't be a problem me going there. And they said, of course, no problem at all. And then he said, well, if it is a problem, I won't have any trouble getting back here. They said, no, of course not. They lied on both instances, or if they didn't lie, they were woefully misinformed themselves. And he wound up in a place where he wasn't supposed to be, according to them anyway. Then they transferred him over to a different place where there was no room for him, and he's sleeping on the floor. It's incredible that these kind of conditions exist here. But this is, I guess it's typical. I guess this happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, well, the only thing is that we're hearing about it, because he has a voice over the air. I mean, how many prisoners of all kinds are going through just exactly these same things, but actually have absolutely nobody that even cares about them, you know? So you can imagine. No, it's the prison industrial complex is alive and well, and for you never even know why they're doing it to people.
Now, did you give phone numbers out? Because I was trying to negotiate with AT&T just now.
I gave the Mike Langowski number, who's Kevin's counselor, and you could also, you know, it's mostly you get a voicemail there, but there's also, you know, you can have to speak to the warden or something like that.
Yeah, it is important that people voice their concern here, because we are talking about human life that is, you know, suffering even more than being in prison for almost 4 years without a trial. So please, if you do call, be responsible and reasonable. I mean, these are people, too, and we don't want them to get even angrier or more full retribution to Kevin. So thanks, Patty, for stopping in and updating us. And, of course, we'll be updating people as the weeks go by. Okay, we managed to get through to our guest overseas. And, boy, what a pain that was. We were dealing with all kinds of things, from weird-looking area codes to weird numbers to actual problems with AT&T. But we did get through in the end. And we have with us Frank from the Chaos Computer Club. Are you there, Frank?
Hello.
How you doing?
We're a little bit tired, but good.
Well, yes, 1 o'clock in the morning over there, isn't it?
It's nearly 2:30, yes.
Oh, okay. I guess I had the time a little wrong there. All right, well, we'll make this as quick as we possibly can then. Recently, a couple of weeks ago, there was a meeting. I'll read the announcement for the meeting first, so people know exactly what it is we're talking about. Monday, December 28th, members of the Legions of the Underground we'll be holding a meeting this evening, 4 p.m. Pacific time. I guess that doesn't really matter. But the meeting was held back in December to discuss possible formal and sanctioned attacks against Chinese and Iraqi data systems in order to protest the human rights policies of both governments. Now, this has gotten some media attention since that happened. Hackers going out attacking Chinese and Iraqi sites. And of course, over the past couple of months, there have been hacked websites in China that have gone on to protest the human rights abuses over there. But this seemed to be a step beyond that. This seemed to be calling for all-out war against these two nations. And I understand that the people at the Chaos Computer Club have initiated a response to this. Frank, could you tell us basically what that response is?
Yes, we are very quite concerned about what the Legion of the Underground proposed, this all-out war, because this was exactly what the people in the information warfare side of the government in the U.S. and in Germany are dreaming about, hackers attacking another state. And so we decided it's time to get some other hacker groups together with us to discuss this problem and to have a joint statement on this issue, stating that Legion of the Underground is not speaking for a lot of hackers here, but only for a small fraction.
Yes, and in fact, I should point out that 2600 has already agreed to be part of that statement. Who else has signed up so far?
To this point, the Loft has signed, the Cult of Dead Cow people are discussing it, Freck is with us, a Spanish group called Hispahack is with us, Pullers from Portugal is with us, and some other groups are at the point discussing if they're going to sign the statement, and everybody's invited there.
Now, what is the main problem that you have with people going out and protesting human rights abuses? Do you see this going beyond that?
The problem is not protest. The problem is if you deliberately go out and trying to sabotage or severe the infrastructure of a country, you're doing damage far beyond everything that's called protest. What you're doing is you're harming people, and you're harming the cause of the hackers. We're trying to establish information freedom. People from our scene are going out there and trying to destroy information networks. It's a complete opposite. And the problem is that hackers could establish themselves as a tool of war with these things. And if this happens, hackers and hacking will be seen as acts of war. And this could very quickly lead to another pair of dead hackers.
And, of course, you referring to the recent tragedy over there in Germany. You want to tell us something about that?
Yes, the case of Tron is not directly connected with sabotaging someone's infrastructure, but it's a case of a very talented hacker who's very deep into chip card hacking and stuff like this, and who was killed or has killed himself. That's unclear. Some people say he has killed himself, or most people think he was killed, or at least driven into suicide. And this guy had a lot of contacts into industry, into criminal scenes, whatever. And was finally, or he was not anywhere to find and to call for 4 days. And after these 4 days, he was found in on a tree in a park in Germany. And we are just trying to figure out what has happened. And there are a lot of traces in every direction. It's very difficult to find a clue there.
That's a pretty ominous development coming from over there. Now, I know in the letter that is being written up, you say that you don't really have a problem with people hacking web pages. Is that true?
That's a statement that has to be discussed. There are quite different opinions, also in Chaos Club, or some people say, okay, it's not okay to hack web pages or just modify computers. Other people say, okay, in some cases it might be legitimate, if not legal, to hack these pages, or maybe to reconfigure a filtering firewall to have people getting better access from maybe inside China. This is an ongoing discussion, and I think this discussion has to be ongoing in the hacker scene in the next days to get something like a point, or something like an updated ethics of hacking into account.
But there were hacked web pages in China over the past couple of months, and that didn't prompt this kind of a response from you. I guess there's a number of people who think that that's pretty much a legitimate form of expression, sort of like graffiti or something like that. But what's being discussed here with this Legions of what is it, Legions of the Underground, is that it? Okay, I can't keep up with the names. That's something a bit beyond hacking web pages. What they're calling for is actual destruction of data systems, is that it?
Yes, that's what they're trying to... And we got the impression that it's only a small group of people who got this idea of especially attacking IREC. Okay, if you're doing something against the Chinese, that might be arguable, because, this is wondering for a long time, and there are close ties between U.S. government and the Chinese, but especially going to the argument, okay, we try to carry out what our government could not carry out. It's the worst thing you can do as a hacker, in our opinion. If you're trying to damage infrastructure, you're not helping the people there, you're damaging people there, because free flow of information is what hackers want. If you're destroying information networks, it's a completely different thing from changing some images on a web server or whatever.
Right.
So this has to be very carefully to keep apart in our eyes.
What would you suggest for someone who's a hacker that's concerned about these issues? How should they be expressing themselves?
Yes, we are trying to set up some kind of discussion board together with one or two of the hacker groups to discuss these issues. And I think the statement when released in the next days will give a good focal point for such discussions, also in news groups and IRC chats.
Is there any way people can contact you or become part of these discussions?
Yes, there's an email address especially for this discussion. It's hacktivism@berlin.ccc.de. I repeat, it's hacktivism@berlin.ccc.de. And people can write emails there, write their opinions there, and we try to get it into the statement or to get it onto the discussion board there.
Okay, great. Well, we want to thank you for joining us at this late hour. How is everything else with the Chaos Computer Club these days?
It's very busy. We had our congress in December in Berlin here, and we had more than 2,000 people here. We're very happy with our party and our discussions and stuff. And it was a quite emotional congress because we discussed our history and the recent things with Tron. And everybody left the place happy, and we are sorting things out right now and trying to get our stuff ready again and set up our networks again and things. Everybody's quite happy here.
Okay, well, good to hear that. I want to wish you well and keep us updated on this.
Okay.
Take care then.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye bye. That was Frank from the Chaos Computer Club over in Germany, and they are distributing a letter. Kind of like a petition, I guess, that pretty much condemns what the Legion of the Underground said in late December, that certain computer systems in certain countries are going to be targeted because of human rights abuses. I understand people being concerned with things like this, but I think Frank made some very good points. Once hackers are seen as tools of war, they're going to be seen like that for a long time, and they're going to be used like that, kind of playing into the hands of the authority figures. But we'd like to hear all kinds of views on that particular subject. Okay, so in other news, and there are a lot of other things going on, we'll be taking phone calls in just a moment, 212-209-2900. This is the most ridiculous thing I think I've heard in a long time. It has to do with America Online. This comes from the Wired News Service. A U.S. federal district court judge rejected an effort by America Online to block AT&T's WorldNet service from using the phrases "You Have Mail," "Buddy List," and "I Am" on its service, according to AT&T. AOL uses a similar phrase, "You've Got Mail," to inform subscribers that email has been sent to them. AT&T actually wants them to not be able to say, I'm sorry, AOL wants them not to be able to say "You Have Mail" because they say "You've Got Mail." This is the most absurd instance of corporate greed and irrational behavior I think I've seen in ages. The ruling came in a hearing on AOL's request for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction against AT&T for trademark infringement. The suit seeks punitive damages. Who knows how much AOL has been harmed by AT&T saying "you have mail." Particularly the term "you have mail" strikes me as the epitome of a generic mark, said William Bosch, attorney at Boston law firm Sugarman, Rogers, Barshak, and Cohen in Boston. No particular reason why they quoted that, just a law firm in Boston. I don't know if they're representing anybody here. How do you describe the concept "you have mail" without using the words "you have" and "mail"? Of course, it sort of makes sense. AOL has been using the phrase "you have mail" since 1989. Primrose said, "Well, now they even got it wrong because they used the phrase 'you've got mail,' not 'you have mail,' right? All right, so Nobody knows what's going on. But come on already. I mean, yeah, all right, you can't go out and start an online service called America Online, all right, because that name is taken. But these are words that we use in normal everyday speech. You have mail, you've got mail, whatever. Let's give this corporate mentality a rest just for a little while. Unbelievable. I think that's a bigger threat than Y2K is ever going to be, but for those of you who still believe Y2K is going to be the big major threat, we have plenty of stories for you as far as that goes. Coca-Cola said on Wednesday it has a plan to ensure that its worldwide distribution runs smoothly in the face of anticipated year 2000 computer problems, but it has no control over some elements. Yes, we may be distributing arsenic instead of Coke, but these things happen, you know? We're all ready. We're all ready for whatever happens. Coca-Cola spokesman Bill Hensel said the readiness of governments is a big issue. In many areas where we do business, the governments control the phone systems, the power systems, and the water. So there is a major concern making sure the governments are adequately prepared. It's a big issue. People are going to need their Coke. He added, however, that Coca-Cola was well on its way to resolving Y2K issues and has backup plans in place. Coca-Cola has already spent $60 million on Y2K preparedness and anticipates spending between $130 million and $160 million total. The Atlanta company, in a statement filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission, said its contingency plans include, get this, and some of you out there might want to take notes, stockpiling raw and packaging materials, increasing inventory levels, securing alternate sources of supply, and other appropriate measures. It's that latter one that kind of worries me. This from the Associated Press, the case of a 12-year-old boy who downloaded dozens of sexually explicit images from a public library's internet computer terminal has drawn national attention because it's the first in which a library has been sued for not installing software that blocks pornographic sites. Last month, the city of Livermore, California, filed its second motion to have the case dismissed. On January 13th, an Alameda County Superior Court judge will decide whether the Livermore Library is liable for the dissemination of materials that, according to the suit, are harmful to minors. This minor obviously had to type in the URL to get there in the first place. I mean, you know, that's part of it. I mean, if you walk into a library and the librarian runs up to you and forces pornographic material onto you, especially if you're 12 years old, okay, I can see that being an issue. I can see someone saying, that's not right. But a 12-year-old kid goes in, knows how to use a computer, he can probably figure out a way around any blocking software anyway, and connects to something that he's not supposed to see. Well, obviously he knows it's there. Obviously he's seen these kinds of things before, or he wouldn't be going there. The librarian walking by, seeing, you know, Debbie Does Dallas or whatever on the Mac, says, no, let's go over here instead. Turn that off. Don't put that on your computer. That's the extent of looking out for someone's public interest. Instead, we make a big national case out of it. How nice. In October, Alameda County Superior Court Judge George C. Hernandez Jr. threw out much of the case brought by the boy's mother, identified in court records as Kathleen R. of Concord. You know, people like this worry me. I mean, what's going to happen? The kid goes to someone's house, does the same thing. Is she going to sue her neighbor now? Is she going to sue the internet? It's crazy. Obviously, he was interested in pursuing this kind of thing, and one way or another, he'll probably figure out a way to do it. San Jose attorney Michael Millen had argued the city wasted public funds and created an attractive nuisance by failing to restrict internet use. Yes, the internet is an attractive nuisance. Just like one of those swimming pools where people leave the water out and idiots go and dive into it. Attractive nuisance. It's a violation of constitutional rights for the library to hold themselves out as a safe place for children while it is in fact harming them. Millen said he is seeking a city policy that forbids minors from using computer terminals without parental supervision. What a great idea. Every library will have two people at a terminal. A child and a parent sitting in the background. What if the parent wants to look at pornography, you know? That doesn't really solve anything. But Livermore Deputy City Attorney Gabriel Whelan said holding the library responsible would set a dangerous precedent. Our position is that a public library should offer everything under the sun to the public, she said. Libraries in general should not be put in the position of being a censor. That job is up to each individual family. The issue of children's access to pornography through computers has resulted in many librarians in California and across the country placing filters on their systems. Several bills before the legislature would mandate filtering for children in public libraries. The judge in the Livermore case, however, agreed with the city's argument that the 1996 Communications Decency Act, which rewrote laws for the Internet age, immunized the city. The city argued that Congress intended to hold worldwide website providers accountable for the material they publish electronically, but not third parties such as Internet service firms and libraries. In November, Millen amended his lawsuit alleging the city had violated the boy's constitutional rights to due process in a way that shocks the conscience. It's the same as if the library had a razor blade display case. This is great. And allowed children to handle blades and the kids got cut. It's so outrageous that it rises to the level of constitutional deprivation. I think this has risen to the level of constitutional depravity. But, I'm sure these analogies will continue to be drawn. Library, the razor blade display case. That's lovely. The actions and policy of the city at a bare minimum display a deliberate indifference to the health and welfare of children, the attorney wrote in his legal brief. But Assistant City Attorney Dan Sodergren argued that the city did not violate any constitutional rights and has no responsibility to protect the boy from the Internet. There is no constitutional right to a safe Internet, he argued. To violate the boy's right to due process, the city would have had to single him out for an abuse of power. And that's what we have to look forward to in the future. Speaking of America Online, AOL said on Monday that its members spent over $1 billion with online retailers through the 1998 holiday shopping season. It's clear, said AOL President and Chief Operating Officer Bob Pittman. It's clear that this past holiday shopping season marks a turning point, when shopping online really became a key part of consumers' shopping patterns. Though it is a critical time to get new online buyers into the habit, shopping online isn't just a holiday phenomenon. AOL said 1.25 million of its members shopped online for the first time this holiday season. And AOL members spent an estimated $1.2 billion in the period between November 26th and December 27th. And December 17th was the heaviest shopping day, as well as AOL's best retail day ever, generating over $36 million in sales of consumer goods and travel-related services. I miss the days when the net was non-commercial. Oh, well. Here's a fun story. Police are looking for as many as five men who forced their way into a telephone company office on Sunday and made off with vital computer equipment, disconnecting phone service for some 75,000 customers. The masked robbers, first tried to use a blowtorch to open the back of one of Sprint's central telephone offices about 8 a.m., but were unsuccessful. Then the men knocked on the front door of the office, located in southwest Las Vegas. When an employee opened it, they forced their way in, brandishing handguns and stun guns. The unidentified victims, two men and one woman, were rounded up, bound, and shot with stun guns. One victim also was severely beaten. The victims were taken to University Medical Center for treatment, and one man remained in the hospital Monday with non-life-threatening injuries. The robbers then went directly to the computer equipment that was operating the phone system at the time and began removing it. It was clear they knew exactly what they wanted, Sprint spokeswoman Detra Page told APB News, which is where we're getting this story from. It was clear they knew exactly what they wanted. The theft left most of Sprint's 100,000 Las Vegas area customers without phone service for as long as 7 hours. while technicians scrambled to install new equipment and restore service. Phone service to all affected area customers was restored by mid-afternoon Sunday. Neither Sprint officials nor police would reveal the amount or type of equipment stolen. Las Vegas police said it's the first time they've heard of such a theft. It's an unusual crime, said spokesman Steve Merriweather, who did not know of any other similar cases in the area or whether there was a black market for such specialized equipment. The spokesman at Sprint's national headquarters in Kansas City said he was unaware of any other cases of phone company computers being stolen. The incident is under investigation by Las Vegas Police and Sprint's Security Division, but that's a pretty wacky story right there. And I'm glad they didn't use the word hacker in it anywhere. That's crime. That's crime involving computers, involving phones. That's got nothing to do with hacking. But you know what's funny is these guys will probably be out before Kevin Mitnick is. And that's just wrong. That's a pretty sad state of affairs. So I'll be keeping up to... I don't know what they were up to. Maybe there were, like, records in there that they wanted to grab before somebody else got them. I don't know. Are they going to start their own phone company someplace? Pretty weird. Finally, before we take some phone calls, the latest in the corporate merger race. Of course, last week we were talking about the biggest corporate mergers of the year. We left out a rather big one. We left out Exxon and Mobil. That's a pretty big merger. In fact, what's that?
It's not computer related. Why would you want to?
Well, we were talking about corporate mergers. It's kind of relevant, I think. Well, they created the biggest company ever on Earth. You know, that's a pretty scary thing right there. So that voice, by the way, is the voice of Isaac.
Hello.
Just flew in from Queens.
Yeah, all the way.
And there are more mergers yet to come. Bell Atlantic, they're not satisfied yet. They took over 9X. They're in the process of taking over GTE. Now they want AirTouch. They want AirTouch. They're the largest, Bell Atlantic, the largest local phone service provider in the United States. They're considering a $45 billion stock acquisition of AirTouch, the country's biggest wireless phone company. An agreement could be announced as early as today. Is an agreement announced? I didn't hear one, but it's possible they might have done it quietly. If the two do merge, the new national company could rival wireless industry leader AT&T Corp. in size, according to analysts. But the thing is, it's also going to exceed them as far as local phone service and all kinds of other things. A one-page statement issued by Bell Atlantic and AirTouch, however, said that discussions do not guarantee a merger will take place. For one thing, they're already partners in a wireless joint venture called PrimeCo, but I imagine they'll figure a way out of that. Also, GTE has to approve the deal before it can be announced, since they're in the process of being taken over as well. Companies just keep getting bigger and bigger and fewer and fewer. Where does it ever end? Okay, we have news from the Justin Peterson camp. Well, that's a weird sound. Where's that coming from?
It's my new voicemail.
New voicemail?
Yes, I received.
Okay, I've never heard that one before. All right, this is from the Los Angeles Daily News. Computer hacker Justin Peterson's second stint as a fugitive from the law is over. This time he is facing jail time for his game of hide-and-seek with the federal government. The former FBI informant Monday made his first trip to court since he was arrested last month in a Studio City apartment. The one-legged, long-haired 38-year-old had been a fugitive since September 30th when U.S. District Judge Stephen Wilson signed a bench warrant for his arrest, asserting that he violated the terms of a supervised release from an earlier jail sentence. After a short hearing on Monday, Wilson said Peterson's fate will be determined January 12th. Prosecutors say his run from the law could result in up to 24 months behind bars. Peterson's lawyer, Nathan Hockman, said his client hasn't admitted or denied the allegations yet, but probably would have something to say next week. Since Peterson went on the run in September, he kept anything but a low profile. His answer machine messages still were returned, and he left a letter on his worldwide web page. Alas, rest assured, I am somewhere having fun with a nice-looking lady, enjoying the first freedom I have felt in some time, he wrote in November. Peterson also claimed that he had taken a job overseas, but authorities said he was hiding in the San Fernando Valley all along. He was arrested without incident on December 11th in Studio City, said U.S. Marshal spokesman Victor Zamudio. He had been staying in that area. Peterson, who lost a leg in a motorcycle accident, also was a fugitive from October 1993 to August 1994, after he was accused of computer hacking into a bank and paying himself $150,000 and phoning in bomb threats to distract bank officials. He was sentenced to 41 months in prison and served his time, but court records show that he violated his supervised release agreement when he left the halfway house in August. It's pretty unbelievable. Quite a story. And, you know, we've been talking about this on the Mitnick list quite a bit, about this story, about, you know, obviously the whole Mitnick case and the latest problems that Kevin has been having in prison. One person really kind of summed this up, I think, in a pretty good way. Exactly what did Kevin Mitnick do that was even comparable to anything Justin Peterson did? Here we have a six-figure thief who phones in false bomb scares to cover his tracks and is sentenced to less time than Kevin spends waiting for trial. What exactly did Kevin do at worst if every allegation of the government is true? Lie to a couple of corporate drones in order to convince them to hand him information he could use to copy something proprietary? How is that even remotely comparable to stealing actual money from actual people while actively threatening their lives? It's a damn good question. Maybe someday we'll hear the answer. (212) 209-2900 is our phone number. All right, pick a number from 1 to 8. And if it's Rebel, it's your fault. What do you say? 5? Okay, all right, 5. Good evening, you're on the air. All right, that's it. Wait a minute. You know, you sound like you think right now. So I don't know exactly how this happened, but what are you talking through? It sounds like you're talking through a pot.
I'm talking on a payphone.
You're talking on a payphone. Okay. Is this a foreign payphone?
It's a Bell Atlantic payphone. Does that explain it?
Maybe it does. Okay. let's be quick about this.
All right.
What's on your mind?
Let's take about a second. You were talking about hacking websites. The websites
yes.
that are hacked, I mean, do they, like, there are websites that are not hacked. In other words, the websites that go hacked, those are the people who, like, don't understand how to secure their systems, right?
Or who have insiders who don't like them.
Right,
yeah,
but like
that.
I had, okay, my when I used to have a website, somebody changed some things on my website. That's because I didn't know how to set certain things, like mm-hmm. the permissions. Is that the same, like nobody can hack the 2600 website, right? Because
why do you say something like that? Why do you go on the air and issue like what is pretty much an ultimatum that 2600 website cannot... Any site can be hacked. It's possible. You're a fool if you think that it's impossible to hack something.
So,
and I'll be the first person to say that it's certainly possible it could be hacked. Absolutely.
No, my point is that, in other words, with the phones, I stay mm-hmm. at some motels that you cannot make free phone calls on the phones because they know that the operators know that it's a hotel phone, and there are some that you can slip by and you can have... go make a free phone call by having the operator dial it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you see, that's a very simple type of setup. That's something where either you disallow calls to certain numbers or you allow calls to certain numbers or there are other numbers that sort of get around the restrictions.
Right.
Lots of times there are ways around it, but, you know, it's pretty much a yes-no thing on a phone system. It's a lot less complex than you know, a website or, you know, where there are many different ways in, there are many different things you can abuse. And also, even if you don't abuse anything, if you just have access to the system, and someone has to have access to the system, you have the human factor. You have the human factor where you simply have to get a password and you're in.
Right. But it's just like the people who run the system, they have to be, you know, the people who have to understand how the system works in order to make it, you know, more secure. That's what my point is.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a lot of payphones in the country are 35 cents a month.
I guess that was one of them.
Yeah, I guess not.
All right.
Yeah, I'm looking at one. It's 35 cents, and I'm in New York City. Why did this payphone say 35 cents? The other one said 25. But anyway.
Wait, it's a Bell Atlantic payphone. It says 35 cents. Well, you know, a lot of phones have the little things on the top. They flip over, and that saves Bell Atlantic money when they raise prices because we know that Bell Atlantic you know, loses money whenever they raise prices. So in order to stop that, they put the new price on the back, so all they have to do is flip it over. If you want to help Atlantic out, just go flip it over yourself, and then you save them money.
Well, your call will be... Ah, that's good!
All right, I think he's being terminated over there somewhere in New York City. No, you don't get to pick any more numbers because, well, we already got him. All right, I'll take that one. What was that, 9? All right, let's go all the way down there. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. You were talking about the issue about the libraries?
Yes.
That well, I run a couple of adult sites, and there was supposed to be a law that came out in November, I believe.
Yes.
That would prohibit sites from allowing children to visit their sites. They would have to have some kind of credit card verification.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
Well, you see, there are lots of sites that are free. They don't require credit cards.
Right, that's the kind of one. And I'm worried that if they outlaw that in the United States, and I have to move my servers over to Canada or Europe. So
yeah, but you see, it's like the Internet is not really a physical entity. Yeah, you could move it over to Canada. That doesn't mean someone's going to have to type .ca afterwards. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. Really, you know, if you put in some effort and say you have to be 18 or over to go into this part of the, you know, of the website, and someone clicks on that, obviously they're saying they're over 18, and that's, you know, what else can you possibly be expected to do? Take a picture of their license or something and
yeah,
you know...
Well, the issue for me is if they had to use credit card verification,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people like anonymity, you know, would go away.
That's true. That is
and
true.
And they'd fear that their credit card would be logged, right? You know, their credit card would be used in a malicious manner.
And people looking at pornography on the net are kind of funny about anonymity sometimes.
Right. No, they're very worried about anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
And only maybe 15% of your visitors are actually going to sign up.
Right. But you see, it goes bigger than pornography. This is, you know, a whole issue as far as people's right to anonymity, period, as far as anything that they're interested in accessing. Who's going to stand up and defend pornography? Very few people actually will do that. But it's a foot in the door when all of a sudden you have to account for yourself. You have to identify yourself when accessing this particular part of the net. And this can be extended to something else, which a lot of us would want to protect.
Right, and
we have to be careful with this.
Right, so the last thing I heard about it was that they would postpone the hearings
mm-hmm.
until December, and in December they postponed it for another 3 months. So there is an organization to fight against this ruling.
And what's that organization?
It's WAPO.
Okay, can you give us
World Adult Sites against I'm not sure really sure for the standing.
Okay.
But,
where are they located? Is there a way to... Do they have a website?
Well, they're located in the United States.
Do they have a website?
Right. I'll try their phone in the URL next week.
Okay, just mail it to us and we'll
read
it on
I'll
the
email
air.
It to you guys and maybe post it.
Okay.
Right.
Thanks for calling. Our email address, by the way, oth@2600.com. Of course, we want to spread all kinds of information on however these battles are shaping up. It's really going to get interesting in the next few years. Good evening. Whoops. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Great, great program.
Why, thank you.
I was just curious, and maybe this is out of ignorance, but I would like to know, do you guys ever come out with the maybe 10 top best websites that you think are very informative on the net at all?
Well, we don't rank them like that because, first of all, there are so many websites throughout the world, it would be impossible and unfair to number them in order of, you know, what's cool and what isn't. If we hear something that's good, though, we talk about it. We either print it in the magazine or we talk about it on the air.
Great, great, great. Oh, that's just it. I think your show's great.
Thanks. And, of course, if you know of any interesting websites or any hacked websites, please let us know about those. We do like to hear about them. I heard some sites in Chile got hacked in the last week or so. Some statements about Pinochet were put on there. And that, to me, that's a legitimate foreign political expression. I mean, how else are you going to get the word out about something that's... you know, that's really pertinent. You can't print your own newspaper, and some countries are not even allowed to print your own newspaper. And, you know, meanwhile, you have these websites run by the government that say all these propaganda things to the rest of the world. If you have an opportunity to change that and reach the rest of the world and say something else, who's to say that that's something evil? Seems to me that's what free speech is all about. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. How else can you let people know? Through micro broadcasting.
Well, there's that too.
You're back on the air.
You're back on the air?
Yes.
Okay. Can you give us any details as to where we can find you? Not physically, obviously, but on the radio.
88.7.
Back on the old frequency.
By the way, BAI 99.5 here is the only station that allows us to speak freely like this at other stations, so I do appreciate it. I would not plug it if you didn't invite me.
Right.
So thank you. It's 88.7. and steal this radio, usually from around 5 or 6 till 1 a.m.
Great. Well, I'll try to listen tonight.
And my show is called 10 Million Flies on Monday night at 10 p.m.
Excellent. Well, good luck to you guys, and keep us updated if anything else changes.
Thanks. I certainly will.
All right. And that's also another interesting battle that's going to be taking place in the years ahead, micro-broadcasting. There's rumors, actually not really rumors, but statements that the FCC is actually thinking of licensing micro-broadcasting. National Association of Broadcasters, NAB, the evil people, they're the ones that don't want this to happen. It's a big threat to them and their commercial interests. They want companies to be owning 500 radio stations or more, and 20-watt radio station broadcasting to a city is a big threat to them. Well, that's the FCC actually is smart enough to realize that that's wrong, and maybe they will serve a purpose after all. We'll just have to see how that pans out. But micro-broadcasting is something that I think is going to be one of the most important issues in the months and years ahead. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, man. It's Fair.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. I have two questions to ask.
Go ahead.
First, I was wondering, is there a legal penalty against putting Free Kevin stickers on stop signs or any kind of signs like that?
Well, gee whiz, you know, everything carries a penalty. You know, it depends on how badly they want to get you. If you drive 1 mile over the speed limit, you know, if you get arrested for that, there's literally anything. Just ask Bernie S. Any minor thing, if they really want to get you, they'll get you for it. I have never heard of anybody being arrested or gotten into trouble for putting a sticker on a stop sign, although I'm sure there are people out there who have. So I can't advise it, but I really don't think we're talking about a major crime here.
Okay. Second, is there a maximum time Kevin can stay at NBC?
You would think there would be. Isaac, do you know something about this?
Well, if he terminates before he's actually brought to trial, that would kind
well,
of be...
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that insight there. But... I would hope that there would be, but I've heard figures from people inside the prison. Of course, this is secondhand that I've heard this. They say we can hold people up to 10 years. You know, pre-trial. It's insane, and I don't doubt it after seeing what's going on here. I mean, we're up to almost 4 years now. It's got to stop sometime. It really has to stop, and it has to stop soon.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I want to know.
Okay, thanks a lot. I really appreciate people having an interest in getting the word out one way or another, and my thanks go out to all the people who have been doing that over the past however many years you've been involved in, because it has made a big difference. It might not be apparent right now, but it does make a big difference. Kevin feels this. Every time we see one of those stickers someplace, it means something. It gets out to more people, and in the end, it's what's going to make the difference. All right, let's take another phone call. Let's go all the way over. You know, this is the very last call. I'm going to take this one. This person called in very late. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening. Could you tell me your prediction of where computer business will be in the next 100 years or so?
Oh, that's a hard question. How can I I mean...
Let's take it down to 25 years.
Yeah, because think of like where the computer business was 100 years ago. You know, it's changed quite a bit. It's probably going to change even more. See, I'm not really in the computer business, so to say, so I don't know. It's going to radically change. It's going to be different than anything we could possibly imagine. Anybody here have a prediction? Nobody? That's almost impossible to answer. Do you have any idea yourself?
I just want to know, do you think hacking will always be...
Oh, okay. Hacking is always going to exist in some form. That I'm certain of. There is hacking before computers. Someone playing around with technology, you know, whether it's discovering electricity or just, you know, playing around with the first television set or the first radios, that's a form of hacking. It's just, you know, experimenting with things that there are no real rules about, and people who don't understand will constantly be misinterpreting what it is you're trying to do. But if you're willing to waste a lot of time and just do something methodical and repetitious, that's a form of hacking, and I think, yeah, that's going to exist in some form. And more than that, I think people outside the hacking world will begin to realize how important it is to have that kind of mentality in order to progress and actually learn something to the benefit of everyone.
Yes, I agree. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello, yes. I'm calling you with 1010 502 pound, and I wanted to ask you how safe or unsafe that might be.
Well... I imagine it would be pretty safe, but I guess you're not making a normal call. Sounds like you're making maybe a free call? An illegal call here? Is that what we're talking about? You're making a...
No, you know what? I'm sorry. I was just chucking quarters in. But that 10-10-502 pound works for me for local, and I've heard other people say it works for them otherwise. So I don't know anything about it. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I don't know what company that is. Do they announce who they are?
No.
They don't. Okay. So basically you're saying that if you dial 1010-502, you have to dial the pound to get an operator? Or
no, 1010-502 pound, then comes on a long beep for maybe 20 seconds or so, but during the beep, you dial the area code and the number.
Really? And it just goes through?
Yep.
From a payphone even? Did you try it from a payphone?
Yeah, I tried for a payphone local-wise. It worked.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we'll give it a shot. You know, we'll see if it works. I'm sure it's not going to work from here because we have a weird phone system, but I'll certainly try it from outside and see if it works. It's 1010-502?
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for calling. And thanks for the tip because you might be saving us lots of money. Well, let's see what happens here. 1010-502. Why do I sound like I'm in a tunnel? All right. Let's figure out who they are first. Wonder if our phone system could even handle this. I think I've crashed the whole thing. No response whatsoever. What do you think is happening?
I think it's dead, Jim.
I've killed the phone system. Okay. Well, gee whiz. We'll have to try this from outside from a normal phone. Oh, well, wait a minute. He did say to try the pound sign thing, so let's try that. See if that works. See, I think what's happening here, I think our phone system is catching it and preventing these numbers from actually getting out. We're being held hostage. Yeah, that's what's happening. All right, well, speaking of being held hostage, we've held our listeners hostage long enough. We're out of here until next week when I believe we're doing a fundraiser. So get your checkbooks ready, folks, because it's time to pay us back for all the knowledge we've been giving you over the past... however many months you've been listening. And, of course, we'll be updating people on Y2K as that draws ever closer. And the Kevin Mitnick situation as things get updated in that particular area as well. Till then, this is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. Bear with us. The theme is
hiding.
Yeah, we only have one working theme machine. So we have to swap things around. But there's a theme. And next time you hear that, it'll be next week at this time. And until then, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. Good night.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. For the bombs was the best to face the worst. I hope that's understood, but did we know?
If you or a family member have been diagnosed with HIV or AIDS, and you have a problem with your government or medical benefits, housing, or need help providing for your children or other family members in the event of illness or death, Bed-Stuy Legal Services may be able to assist you. For more information, please call Bed-Stuy Legal Services on a Monday or Tuesday at 718-636-1155. That's 718-636-1155. This has been a public service announcement by WBAI on behalf of the Bedford-Stuyvesant Community Legal Services Corporation.